Support comes from Empower Missouri's Affordable Housing Coalition, working to address the causes of housing insecurity and homelessness through tenant advocacy. Information at empowermissouri.org/housing.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
Republican Rick Heidner has made a name for himself in Illinois, not in politics, but in business. Heidner has been a real estate developer, video gambling mogul, and he owns a gas station chain and fuel company. He made his entrance into the GOP primary and the governor's race late last fall. He made his decision after determining the existing candidates didn't have a path to beating incumbent Democrat J.B. Pritzker in November. On this episode of Politically Speaking, I ask Heidner why he's the candidate that Republicans should pick. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, an in-depth examination of Missouri and Illinois politics.
The instant we got to Illinois, we joined the Green Party. This was 2000.
So I've tried to push for those that I think are honest and really care about the future of the city.
You know, this wasn't a path that I thought I would choose in 2012 when I was able to win the closest Republican victory in the nation.
If it's something that will help Southern Illinois, I'll work with him on it. If there's something he's doing wrong, then you got to fight him on it.
I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe less government is better, and I believe local control is better.
I choose to fight for working families and for union members.
Welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm St. Louis Public Radio's Metro East reporter, Will Bauer, and joining us is one of the four candidates vying for the Republican nomination in Illinois' governor's race.
Good afternoon. My name's Rick Heidner. I'm running for governor of our beautiful state of Illinois.
Thanks for being here, Rick. And maybe before we jump into all the issues and all the campaign and whatnot, I wanted to give listeners an opportunity to know more about you. So if you can, fill us in on your background.
Sure. I was born and raised here in Illinois. I'm 65 years old. I have a wife and five kids. Started off with very, very little in the beginning. When I was one, my brother was two. My mother and father got divorced. He left and never saw him again. So my mother had to raise us by herself. She was a housekeeper maid and a hostess. Very, very humble beginning. She was very proud, never took anything for anyone. And we just really suffered through the beginning of life. When I was six, my brother was seven. We actually started working. We had two paper routes before school, two paper routes after. And just built until realized I had to be in my own business. Did that by the time I was 16 and a half years old. Today, we have about 800 employees for our four major businesses in our family, about 280 buildings in 12 states, about 800 tenants, and Ricky Rockets fuel company and some other things. So really from nothing, you know, I'm the American dream. That's what I'd like you to know.
And maybe just a little funny coincidence. I was noticing, so one of your companies is Prairie State Energy, but just to be clear, this is not the same Prairie State Energy that would own the coal plant in Washington County, not far from here, correct?
That is correct. It's a fuel distribution company, and we have about 90 locations that we deliver fuel to.
I had to read that one twice because I was like, wait, the coal plant's municipally owned. How in the world? But just same name, I suppose.
Coincidence.
All right. Well, why did you want to throw your hat in the ring and run for governor?
So I never had any aspirations at all of going into politics. I've always had to deal with politics being in all the businesses that I have throughout the state of Illinois. But what really happened was, you know, I kept seeing all these people getting hurt here in Illinois, kept seeing this revolving door in the justice system. I couldn't understand the Safety Act and the not cooperating with ICE and it just kept breaking my heart. My heart, my soul kept just telling me, Rick, you have to do this. Rick, you have to do this. When I looked at who was running, I saw zero path for any of the candidates, the other Republican challengers, to ever have a chance of beating J.B. Pritzker. So I said, I needed to do this. I just had to do this.
So I've been asking everyone about Emerson College polling that was released at the start of January. And at that time, you would have been in sixth, but I think it's important to note that you had just gotten into the race relatively recently when that poll was taken. And so maybe first off, why did you get in so late, and do you think it was maybe too late?
Well, I really didn't 100% decide to run till probably 10 days before the petitions, the signatures needed to be put in. And it was very difficult for me. You know, I'm in a regulated business, and actually J.B. Pritzker is my regulator. So I felt it to be incredibly dangerous. But like I said, my heart and my soul was pushing me. Then I was trying to get a lot of my business settled. Also, I had tremendous respect for Darren Bailey's tragedy that happened. So that slowed me down a little bit. And I really didn't even start running until after the first week of January. And I know I started at 1%. I'm pretty sure I'm in second place right now behind Darren.
How have you kind of approached maybe this race, knowing that you're working on a slightly more abbreviated schedule, maybe working uphill in this race?
Well, I think in every room, it took me about six to eight debates or six to eight places that I went into in with the other candidates before I realized a lot of us are like-minded in a lot of things. But I realized that I was pretty much every person that was in that room, from whoever had the least of means to anybody that built a large businesses and became super successful, and all that path in between, you know, a tenant, an employee, an employer, a person who pays a lot of real estate taxes, people that are, you know, responsible for a lot of somebody with a lot of mortgages. So I really feel that people understand me very, very well. I also know that the state of Illinois is a business. It's a business that's been totally run into the ground. And I'm a businessman. I saw what the president has done with the United States, with a beautiful America. I'm running it as a business now. And, you know, I know that I could do the same thing. Instead of us being a state of constantly how much we can take from you and take from you and take from you, I want to make the state into a state that where you can make money, which obviously just resonates more tax dollars without increasing any taxes. We'll actually be able to lower taxes.
So you said part of your calculation in making the decision to run was determining that the other three candidates in the Republican primary didn't have a path to success against Pritzker. So maybe what's different about you that you think you could win a statewide contest in Illinois? And also, it's a midterm election, and the party in power tends to struggle in midterm elections.
So once again, you know, it's the business part of it, yes. You know, I believe that people absolutely do understand, and they actually want a businessman to run the state. And again, the other candidates, especially now interacting with them more and more, you know, I really feel that I'm the person that should take the reins here and go against J.B. Pritzker, win the election, and run the state.
And you were just mentioning President Trump, and it seems that you're pretty in line with him, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong there. But I guess my question would be, do you think that maybe hurts you in a general election down the line?
No, I don't. I think a lot of the state is leaning away from these crazy things that the Democratic Party is doing and has done, and the current governor, that don't make any sense. Keeping us safe is really the very first thing. Again, in the fall session, all it was how much more can we charge you? How much 45 cents more on tolls? And we're going to charge you for a bonfire. We're going to charge you, you know, to pick up your garbage. Yeah, you know, people are done with this, I believe. I think and by the way, I've done a tremendous amount of business with, you know, in the state, and I've dealt with a lot of the Democratic side and a lot of the Republican side, and I've donated to both sides, by the way. Not that that makes that big of a difference. The biggest deal is I'm tremendously respected by Democrats and that are in office, and I'm respected tremendously by Republicans, and I've respected them also. So I think I'm going to have, first of all, I have an open door policy, and I have no problem talking to anybody. If you make sense, you know, we're going to talk. If you don't make sense, you're not going to, we're not. But the only other thing, every single legislator that comes into my office or calls me, the first thing I'm going to do is talk to them about term limits. We should have two terms for a governor. I mean, you know, none of this would be this way if J.B. Pritzker wasn't able to run for a third term.
And you mentioned the donations to the Democratic Party, and maybe this is a symptom of the state of politics in 2026, but Ted Dabrowski has criticized you for previous donations to Chicago area Democrats in previous election cycles. So what would you say maybe to those primary voters who see that and think, what in the world? How could you support a Democrat?
Well, first of all, again, I do a tremendous amount of business here, and I've always been a people person. And, you know, Ted wants to bring up my donations, but, you know, Ted doesn't want to tell anybody that he's taking a lot of money for Democrats. So we're ending up with the same cycle that happened in 2022, just with another character. So, you know, I'd much rather have given money to Democrats. And by the way, again, I have relationships with all these people now, so you can imagine how well it's going to go for me when I become governor working with them. I've had Democratic politicians that are excited that I'm actually running because they're not even happy with some of the things that go on. So, I much rather have given money to Democrats than be taking money from Democrats right now.
And it seems to me that a big need for whatever Republican emerges from this primary will be appealing to suburban, urban voters, particularly in the Chicagoland, but I suppose also down in this neck of the woods here in the Metro East, too. So how do you go about maybe peeling off some of those voters that maybe are moderates and they voted for Pritzker in the past, but they're not happy with him this cycle?
So if you're talking about more of southern Illinois, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Or, I mean, yes, that's a good point that southern Illinois suburban voters may have different values than Chicago suburban voters, but either or.
So, you know, I don't know if you know the history, but I was a big supporter of the racetrack industry. I was doing a huge project in Tinley Park that was going to reignite the entire horse racing industry in the state of Illinois, especially for the harness racing community. You know, I'm in the fuel business, so I understand the farming, especially with the corn for the fuel industry. I understand about energy with the coal industry. I hope these people give me a chance. You know, I really ask anybody to spend an hour or two and just, you know, go on the web pages, look me up, read all about me, listen to the things I've said, just for, you know, whatever amount of time. This is such a huge election. You know, I think we're only one or two voting cycles away from being New York City if we are not careful. So, please. Once again, I'm 100% sure that I'm the candidate that can beat J.B. Pritzker. So a vote for me at least gives us a chance.
You were just mentioning a moment ago how maybe one of your first conversations with Democrats, if you're elected to the governorship, would be about term limits. And I'm envisioning a scenario, right, if you do win, you're going to be working with Democratic supermajorities in Springfield. So from a philosophical standpoint, how else do you kind of approach that relationship with your party being in the minority, super minority?
Right. So I don't believe I'm in the super minority. I think I'm going to be in a very, very good spot because, again, I've worked with a lot of these people already, especially being in the businesses that I've been. I've worked downstate. I've met a lot of the politicians down in Springfield with my gaming industry. I've also worked with a tremendous amount of aldermen and things in Chicago. I built a lot of buildings all throughout the state, mostly up north here, but again, they understand me and they respect me, and I'm going to get along very well with them. Which really, if you think about it, you know, when we talk about one of the other opponents, we'll say Ted Dombrowski for an example. All he talks about is how he would never do this and never do that and never participate with the Democrat. Well, good luck in this state, my friend. Good luck in this state because you have zero chance with that attitude.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of the things that you would do if you were elected. And I'll start with state finances, because it seems like that's a pretty popular one for your primary opponents who are really set on reining in state spending. So if you were elected governor, how would you approach the budget? And if you're gonna cut it, where do you start?
So, you know, when J.B. Pritzker came into office, we were at $37 to $38 billion in the budget. Now we're at $55, $56 billion. In one of my industries, he's raised the tax 17% in the time that he's been there. The first day I go in the office, however I can do it, I want to freeze all tax increases, completely freeze, no increases. Then I want to go department by department by department by department, one by one, and go through every single thing and see where there's waste and abuse. And I'm positive I'm going to find that, unfortunately. The other thing is I'm going to stop driving business out of Illinois, and I'm going to start to invite business into Illinois. I understand what it takes to be able to, what you need and the things that we have to do to get businesses to come here. You know, look at what happened with Ken Griffin, one of the most, you know, charitable people that we had in this entire state that probably ever in existence here. And for him to take himself and his business and his 1,100 or most of his 1,100 employees and leave the state is unconscionable to me. That wouldn't happen. When I see at Arlington Heights, the 326 acres, what a debacle that is. It'd be half built already if I was governor. It's just crazy to me. If we generate more business just with the taxes we have, we generate more taxes. It's common sense. It's just common sense. So then we'll figure out all that. We'll save, we'll build, and then we'll lower taxes.
And then in terms of a place that you're interested in looking at for maybe auditing or cutting spending, are there particular places of the budget where you think we need a particular or particularly strong set of auditing or place that would need to be cut?
Well, I'm going to audit all departments, period, every single one. But the first day I walk in office, the Safety Act is gone and the sanctuary state is completely gone. That's gone. And, you know, whatever billions of dollars we spent on that, I mean, we're paying for hotels, fully leasing hotels for illegal immigrants. You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, there's been things that I've seen wasted just from people that I know. So, you know, all that's got to stop. It just has to stop.
So let's talk more about those two things. So maybe first with the Trust Act, which gives sanctuary state status, right? That generally means that state and local law enforcement won't assist the federal government with immigration enforcements unless there's a warrant. But why does that, in your eyes, need to go away on day one if you're elected governor?
Yeah, let's talk about that, you know, and let's not be Minnesota, all right? So we have hardened criminals from other countries that we know are murderers and rapists and pedophiles and robbers, and they commit a smaller act of violence or something here, and we have them in a cell in one of our sheriff departments or one of our cities, and by law they cannot call ICE or the federal government to come and get these criminals. Where does that make any sense? And instead we have to release them. Yes, I mean, it's literally criminal, all right, on what's happening. People are getting hurt. People are getting hurt. Now you release them, all right? So let's just talk about ICE or even the National Guard, but let's just talk about ICE for a second. So instead of calling them on the phone and come pick up these criminals, we let them out. Now what happens? ICE doesn't know where they are. Our sheriff's departments, our police departments aren't allowed to call ICE and say, listen, we know there's a gang of Venezuelans in this apartment building and they're in apartment 703 and 705 and 707. Okay. No, instead, they're not allowed to do that. So now what happens? The ICE goes, instead of having six or seven agents go get those criminals, now instead they have 20 and 30 out there. Our government is actually fueling the fire for people to go out there and protest. And now they have to, instead of now they have to go inside of a place. And if they find 30 people in there And 10 of them don't have documentation, even if they were good people, even if they were here for a long time, even if they had homes. You know, they're obligated by law now to take them. They can't stand there and say, well, you look like a nice person. You've been here for 15 years. You got kids in high school. I'm going to let you stay. They can't do that. They have to take them. This is insanity what's happened. Just insanity what's happened. They would have been out of here in 6 to 8 weeks. They could have came in. They could have got 90% of everybody they were really looking for, and then they could have been out of here. Instead, we're probably in the over 200 days of this. And what? So somebody can go on Jimmy Kimmel and on Colbert and pound their chests and say Donald Trump's a Nazi. It's craziness. It's just terrible. Disrespecting our federal government like this and our police officers.
And then the other legislation is the Safety Act, which maybe the most well-known part of it, right, is eliminating cash bail. Do you think that needs to go too? Or maybe is it something that you're open to working with state lawmakers to amend it and make it better in some way, shape, or form?
Well, I don't mind looking at amending it, but let's just probably start all over because it's got to stop the first day. And I can do that by executive order. And because right now, look at the poor little girl that got lit on fire. 71 times that guy was arrested, 71 times. He has an ankle bracelet that nobody's monitoring. And some poor little girl gets set on fire. You know, I was talking to the Tribune. They wanted to do, they did 14 minutes with me after one of the debates. They put nothing in there. They put in one sentence after I spent. And all the answers, the guy's nodding his head. Yeah, he agrees with me. But he says to me, well, really, you know, Rick, that's just an outlier. People will say that's just an outlier. And I didn't even understand exactly what an outlier was, but I figured it out pretty quick. It was an anomaly, a one in a million, whatever. Well, if that person would have been in jail, it would have been zero in a million. If that poor little girl was that man's sister or his mother or his wife or his daughter, I'll bet you it wouldn't have been an outlier for him. So, yeah, I have a real simple reason, whether you have money or whether you don't have money. And by the way, bail always goes basically by your assets, too. So bail for me might be $100,000 and for somebody else, it might be $1,000. But I have a real simple way. If you don't want to have to put up bail, don't commit a crime. Just don't commit a crime. It's really not that hard to figure out.
So in that case that you were mentioning, the woman getting lit on fire in public transit, I think there are some people that would say, because the state's attorney did say, we want that person to be detained on some of the previous criminal activity, but the judge said no. And so some are going to see that maybe as not a condemnation of the broader elimination of cash bail, but rather the judge making a terrible decision. Do you see that critique of the system?
1,000% it has to be critiqued. You know, there should be, if you commit this, it should be a minimum of this. If it's, you know, depending on the crime. You know, I have a problem with all of it. I have a problem with all of it. It needs to be fixed.
To make sure I understand you, you are open to amending it, but your first gut instinct is we should scrap it and start over. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct.
In terms of other state policy that I wanted to ask you about, the state passed the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, I'll get it out, in 2021. And basically, this phases out fossil fuels for renewable energy. What do you make of that legislation?
I'm in disagreement with it. You know, I mean, we have a huge coal industry here. We should be, you know, embracing our coal industry here. Fossil fuels, I mean, I'm in the gas distribution business and the gas fuel center business. Whether I'm in the businesses or not, I mean, it's fairly simple. I think we need to do the nuclear small pack energy plants. I think that'll help us tremendously. I also think that the AI community and the data center community should be paying more for energy because they're creating a problem and it shouldn't be trickling down to the homeowners. So there's a lot there.
I believe there was actually just legislation called the Power Act that was introduced in Springfield that would deal with the very thing about making the companies that are behind data centers pay for the electrical strain that they're putting on the system. So timely.
Great. Great. Well, they may have heard me a month and a half ago. Who knows?
I did want to return to taxes and affordability, which affordability seems like it's really going to be a big theme of the 2026 midterms, or just making everyday life more affordable. So say you're elected to the governor's office. How do you start to make everyday life more affordable for Illinoisans?
Well, I've gone over that with you already. First thing I want to do is freeze all taxes so there's no increases. You know, one idea that I had, I don't know, since we're not going to talk about it because I already said it seven times, but, you know, one thing that I really like to do is for first-time home buyers, for my kids came to me and said, Dad, you know, a lot of our friends think they're never going to be able to buy a house. So I started thinking to myself, you know what, why don't we not charge them income tax on whatever they put down as a first-time home buyer? And I'm not talking about just kids. I'm talking about if you're 45 years old with kids and you're whatever you put down, let's not charge them income tax on that 1 year. So if you make $75,000 a year and you save $40,000, let's only tax them on $35,000 for that 1 year to help them. It's given an incentive to be a everybody seems to love the idea. And I would tell you that once we do that here, or as we're doing it, as I'm trying to get that implemented, I would go to President Trump and I would ask him to please do that federally, because I think he wants to have people have a home ownership also.
I wanted to also talk a little bit about education. Illinois lawmakers let a private school tax credit program expire in 2023. Do you think that was a mistake?
I'm 1,000% for school vouchers. I feel that teachers should be very much, there's a lot of wonderful teachers, but teachers should be very accountable to the way that they're teaching the students. I think parents have the right. So if we're spending $30,000 a year on a student, what I'd like to do is, if you're not happy with the way that student, that customer of that school is, the student, that customer of that school is the parent, if they're not happy, I'd like to give them a 50% voucher for that. And I'd like to have them be able to put their school, their child in a private school. I absolutely feel that a tremendous amount of teachers unions, especially one in the state, has become a political organization instead of concentrating on what they should be concentrating on, which is teaching our students and giving them a great education. You don't make your scores higher by lowering the way that you're looking at what education is. So I think that's horrific.
And then in terms of Chicago Bears funding, do you think the state of Illinois should have any role in potentially helping them build a new stadium?
Boy, if you haven't seen me talk about this. So yes, I do believe, you know, there's 326 acres sitting over there in Arlington Heights, the old Arlington Heights racetrack. The Bears bought it. The Bears have rented from us for 100 years. Doesn't anybody think that they deserve to own their own property? The craziness to say that the Bears would have to pay $523 million or whatever the number was if they want to leave, because that's what's owed. They're renters. When their lease is up, that's all they're responsible for. I'd love to go to one of my renters, let's call it Starbucks, and say, oh, your 10 years lease is up and you're leaving. Well, I still have a $480,000 mortgage. You have to pay it off or you can't leave. Doesn't happen. 326 acres is a city inside of a city. It's a dome stadium. It's much more than just the stadium and parking. It's hotels. It's restaurants, it's bars, it's fuel centers, it's condominiums. It's going to be all kinds of things. It will generate hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of tax dollars. All they've ever asked for is help with the infrastructure money. And it's a lot of money, okay? But what's better? Now we may lose the Bears to Indiana. It's not even a zero if we lose them. Now it's a huge negative. We get the 326 acres developed. We're going to have plus, plus, plus. And if the Bears leave, we're not at zero. We're at minus, minus, minus. Where's the business sense of all of that? They bought it in 2023. If I was governor, it'd be half built right now. Now, all of a sudden, now we're competing. Now we're running back to the table. Now we're agreeing to some things. Why? Why? Who couldn't figure out that this was the right thing to do anyway? Who couldn't figure this out? The answer is yes, infrastructure money for sure. Making sure that their real estate taxes aren't insane. Yeah. I mean, you know, go to every other stadium in the country, take the highest tax on every anyone, just charge them that. It'll be 10% of what they're threatening them with.
So given that you're a business developer, right, and you do these kinds of deals in real estate all the time, in terms of the infrastructure, how do you go about that? Is it property tax incentives like it would be for a TIF district? Is it sales tax and revenue bonds, starter bonds? How do you think would be the best way to go about it?
You could look at all of it. It doesn't matter. Get to the number that they need and back into how you get it to them. Okay. And then look at what you're going to generate. Okay. And then you can figure it out. It's simple math. That's the only gift that the dear Lord gave me more than anything. He gave me the gift of figuring these things out very quickly. You know, let's go to Midlothian, just please, if you don't mind, a couple minutes. 6 acres empty on the corner of 147th and Cicero. 15 acres next to it, completely empty, owned by the city. I go there. I say, I want to build the Ricky Rockets Fuel Center. I can generate 100 jobs. I can generate all kinds of tax dollars, sales tax dollars, real estate tax dollars. It's blighted. It's weeds. It's an old car dealership crushed to the ground. I needed $3 million. I'm going to generate the money. They didn't write me a check for it. I'm going to get the $3 million over 20 years. You know, and now look what's there. And the second I decided to do the 6 acres and I made the deal, they sold the 15 acres. Go over there. It's completely flourishing now. The other one is in Kankakee on 57 and 17th Street. West of 57, it's all developed. East, not developed, right? A Kmart. 11 years vacant, the roof caved inside of the Kmart. I go there, the 11 acres. I tell them I need a little incentive and go look at it. And I spent $24 million there. Beautiful Ricky Rockets Fuel Center, Wendy's, a cannabis store, 100 truck parking, and some other tenants there. It's thriving now. And now what's happening? Call the mayor of Kankakee. He's getting development on the east side. It's simple, simple, my friend. It's just so simple. If somebody could just stop worrying about destroying things and start concentrating on building something.
So closing message here, why are you the right choice for the Republican Party in this primary?
Well, I'm the right candidate to go against J.B. Pritzker, because trust me, he doesn't want to run against me. That's number one. Number two, I'm going to resonate all kinds of business. I'm going to bring them back to Illinois. We should be Florida. When people are leaving New York right now, and they're, you know, if you were leaving New York because of what's happening there, wouldn't you come to Chicago because of what we have is the same beautiful lakefront, beautiful high rises, beautiful condos? They're not even considering here. They're flying right over the top of us and going to Texas, or they're flying south to Florida. Why can't we be Florida? We should be Florida. Florida's almost full. We should be Florida. This is what I'm going to do. I'm the right candidate because I have the right brain. I have the right, I took a nickel and I made it into what I've made it into. And I create my 800 people that work for me, besides the tens and tens and tens of thousands of jobs that don't work for me, but work where I built, work where I built. Those businesses hire people. Those businesses pay taxes. Those businesses are flourishing. I'm the right person. Believe me, I wouldn't have done this if I didn't believe that 1,000,000%.
And if there are people out there that are curious about you or your campaign and want to learn more, where can they do that, Rick?
You can go to rickforillinois.com. And I say, please spend the time. There's a 5.5 minute video on me that American Dream did like 4 or 5 years ago. There's a magazine article that the Barrington Quintessential Barrington did on me and my family, the American Dream. It's called there too, because I am the American Dream. But there's also all kinds of things you can read and see and watch me speak. Please spend the time. This is such an important election. I don't want 4 more years of J.B. Pritzker. If you don't resonate to me, I'm afraid that's what's going to happen.
Rick, thank you for the time.
No, thank you very much. I'm very, very appreciative of you doing this. So thank you.
Rick is the fourth Republican running in the governor's race that we've spoken to. If you missed any others, feel free to check them out at stlpr.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Until next time, so long.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.